Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
All right, let's have some fun. Start it. Check, mic check, hot check, hot check, hot chick, hot mic.
Welcome to Rearview Mirror Podcast. We are at episode 9 today.
Wow, is it 9?
I know. Last day in the single digits. It's been a fun journey with you, man.
Did we scrap the very first one we did?
No, it's still hanging out there somewhere.
I was hanging used when we're out.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to go back and listen to it, too.
Yeah.
I'll try to find it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess you're right. We recorded more than that. We recorded 10, actually. But, okay, so right out of the gate, if I hack and cough today, welcome to Middle Tennessee in March. My allergies have kicked up. Oh. I know your wife, Jen, has struggled with those at times, right?
We paid for a lot of allergy shots for Jen and Will, my son. So
I know Will too. Okay.
Yeah, man, he's got it.
No,
he's pets and everything.
Okay,
so
yeah. Jonathan should be living in a bubble.
He's a bubble boy.
But anyway, and of course he became a landscaper there for a season and survived it. Yeah,
that's smart.
Anyway, I know I'm congested, been coughing a little bit, but
we're gonna forgive you.
Thank you. Hey, how was last night?
It was great.
Tell us about it. That was so fun.
Downtown Nashville, I went with my son to see Jason Isbell, one of our favorite artists, one of your sons, Jake's favorite artist.
I know, yeah.
And at a brand new venue called The Pinnacle.
No idea. Where's that? Is it in the Pinnacle Bank Building or?
Next to it.
Okay. Kinda.
Right in that area on 12th. And I mean, brand new. Like, wow. I think it opened in February.
Oh, wow.
It was great. The venue was cool. He did a kind of a unique show. He wrote an album that's just him and an acoustic guitar and sang songs from that, sang songs from the old days. And just, it was a very low key, a lot of people in our demographic, age demographic there, but
that's
kind of
fun.
A low key show, man, but it was so good. And just, we had a great time.
Yeah.
Will loves that kind of stuff. And so
what is it about his voice for you that you just love? And the whole package of him, not just voice.
Now, this is not me saying this, because in Nashville, if you say this, you could get really crucified. Yeah. One of my best friends is in this building, and he's a music guy, and he would say, and I'm just not sure he can sing. And you can't say that loudly in Nashville because you'll get banished and we'll make you go live in Franklin or something. And, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it about certain sounds that you're attracted to and others you're not?
Right.
I think the fact that we've got family history where he's from in Northern Alabama.
Okay.
And a lot of the references to Nashville and Alabama in the South, I think, resonate.
So his stories really grab you.
He's an incredible. I had two people in front of me that made this comment last night, various age ranges that, and Jake, your son, would say this too, and Will would. His lyrics are one of the best songwriters in terms of creative lyrics that say a lot in a little.
Uh-huh.
And
can tell a story,
I think that's attractive to people.
Yeah.
And it's not everyone's taste.
Yeah.
You know, for sure.
Yeah.
And, this was a really unique kind of performance with just him without his band and a couple hours and just a really
good for you.
Yeah. So it's fun.
Well, it's funny. I only knew you there because I texted you excited about your Arkansas Hogs in the tournament last night when they were making this big run to make a comeback to beat Kansas, which was fun to watch. And then I get this text back at Jason Isbell. I thought, good choice for you. Probably a better choice for you.
I've deviated some in the last years. I watched one basketball game this year.
You told me that. That's crazy.
And it was the one I went to with a friend of mine in the SEC tournament.
Oh, yeah. That was just a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me. Didn't watch last night, but I understand they won, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good. That's fun. Okay. I got an idea for a day.
I'm willing to go with it, I think.
Okay.
I don't even know what it is.
Well, if not, we never release this one.
Right. Yeah, that's the beauty of a podcast.
Isn't it?
You can do whatever the hell you want to do, and you can just scrap it, man.
Delete.
Yeah. It's great.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I've been...
You're back to your computer this week.
I am, because I've got something I want to read.
You've already
glanced
at it, too, so
I know.
That's good.
Well, I know, because I don't know why. It's like I'm afraid it's
gone away. This is so funny. That's one of my favorite parts of this whole podcast.
I'm
just watching you... Okay. Squirm a little. Okay. No, do it. Leave it up.
I'm just going to for a little bit. But so I've been watching this trend. That's not the right way to say it. Our daughter, Sarah, does her own little podcast with her friend, Kenzie. It's a cool podcast called the Even If Podcast. And two, you know, early 30s girls talking about life and just how they're navigating things. And they do a beautiful job. Well, on an episode, I don't know, a month or so ago, They did this thing that I guess is going around in the social media world right now called I had a cup of coffee with my younger self this morning. A lot of girls are doing this, right? And so it's kind of just where they're talking about it. You know, went back and met my younger self, and you know, she had her hair in a ponytail and was wearing a pink Gap sweatshirt, and you know, I was dressed for work and had on my heels or whatever. But then it's just this real kind of self-compassionate moment where they talk about, when I was 20, this is what myself was worried about. And now, you know, as a 35-year-old, I'm looking back at it going, oh my gosh, girl, don't worry. This is going to work out okay. Or what you've got is enough. And it was just, it's kind of a cool thing.
Interesting.
It comes out of the psychology therapy world in many ways. You know, there's a form of therapy where they'll use something called the empty chair technique. And, you know, like you're with your therapist and they're talking about something. Well, let's pretend your younger self was in that chair. What would you want to say to him? You know, so it's a cool.
Yeah.
Cool thing.
Okay.
But it was very feminine. I mean, the ones that I saw, because Sarah showed me hers when, as my daughter, of course, it moved me. And then I saw some other girls doing it. And, you know, it was all about makeup and hair and then relationships. And it was sweet. It was good, you know, but I thought, that's weird. And then I couldn't stop thinking about it, Steve.
About the makeup and hair or the whole?
So I've getting a new makeover. No, but I just thought about, there is something so cool about looking back. And then, you know, slow to connect
somebody should
the
do
dots.
A podcast on that.
Oh my gosh, am I slow to connect the dots or what? I thought, well, crap, that's what Pierce and I are doing every week. We're looking in the rearview mirror, you know, we really are kind of looking back. And so I thought, I'm going to sit down and write one of those, you know. I had a cup of coffee with my younger self and just see how that goes. So I actually wrote it out, and here's what I'd love to do, and let's just see how this goes. I'd love to read with you and share with you kind of what I wrote. And and then maybe we can just talk about it. And I don't know, see if there's some questions or see where this takes us.
I love it.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So here we go. That's why I have my computer, by the way.
Oh, that's fine. Okay. I wouldn't expect you to remember all this. So
No. Okay. So mine goes like this. I had a beer with my younger self last night.
What? You're off already because you don't drink beer.
You'll follow me.
All right, I'll let you talk.
No, this is good. I had a beer with my younger self last night. Actually, neither of us ordered beer because he was too young and I still don't like the taste. I told him, you'll often believe something's wrong with you because you don't like IPAs, stouts, or microbrews. Seems like all of your buddies do. Sometimes it'll be lonely, but that's okay. The truth is, you have a high aversion to anything remotely close to bitter. So then we toasted our Coca-Cola classics.
Huh.
He was wearing gym shorts and Converse Chuck Taylor high tops and had just finished playing basketball. He told me he sucks and he missed too many shots. I told him it's really not about the game or the points. It's about moving and staying active. It's about building friends. I encouraged him, don't quit, and that he'll be a much better man if he keeps doing it. He told me how he gets afraid when mom yells or when his boss cusses at him. He feels small and assumes that he must be doing something wrong. I told him, not necessarily. Even authority figures, like parents and bosses and even pastors, they're not always right. Their behavior doesn't have to define you. Sort through their words. If something's true, learn from it. If not, leave those words with those people. He told me he's working hard to save money for college and he's exploring student loans to help pay for college. I wanted to scream, no! But instead, I just said, well, I'm proud of your determination. You know, being the first in your family to go to college, that's a big deal. But be curious. Explore other options. Debt will never be your friend. He looked confused, but I hope maybe a seed had been planted. He told me that he's every girl's good friend. He went on, he said, why don't any of them want to date me? I said, look, one day you'll be grateful for all the friendships you've been building with women. They're teaching you more about that world than you realize. And, young man, there is a girl out there, the right one. She's coming. He grinned, and he told me that he hopes that she's from the South. I told him, oh, she will be from the South, but not the SEC, rather from Southeast Asia. I wanted to tell him Malaysia, but I knew he had no idea where that was. I also told him that he will adore her, and she will be more than he has ever hoped for or dreamed for. Exotically beautiful, inside and out. She will be so worth the wait. He told me he wants to go to med school and be a cardiologist. I told him that's a great dream. And one day he will tend to people's hearts just in a very different way than he's thinking now. He told me that he battles with lust and he thinks he's the only one. I told him that's one of the biggest lies every man tends to believe. He's certainly not alone. I also told him that seeing a beautiful woman is not the same as lust. He looked really puzzled with his black and white worldview being shaken. He told me that a lot of his friends are making bad choices and how much that bothers him. I said, hey, be careful, bud. It's easy to feel self-righteous when you're not making their mistakes, but don't be blind to your own. Pride, control, and judgment can do just as much damage as drugs and alcohol. Actually, maybe even more damage in the long run. He told me he wishes he could be on the stage and preach and teach like his friends. I told him that he will be into more people than he can imagine. But in time, he'll discover something far more valuable. A circle is always more meaningful than a stage, I told him. Deep conversations with a few people around your table will be far richer than any public performance to the many. Our time was almost up. Any last advice, he asked? Live fully, love passionately, take risk. You're going to make mistakes, but they don't have to define you. You're going to get hurt. You'll be wounded, but tend to those wounds. And leave the old wounds behind and carry your healed scars into the future. We finished our Cokes and went our separate ways. As I watched him disappear into the night, I thought, I really wish he could have actually heard words like that those many years ago. That was my beer with myself.
Wow. That's heavy.
It hits me, yeah. Even sharing it with you, Damien, it hits me afresh.
That is heavy.
Yeah. You know, my story, as you know, Steve, you know, there wasn't strong male voices speaking into me when I was growing up. My dad, kindest man on the planet, as we've joked about many times. But he was hollow when it came to offering, you know, wisdom or advice or guidance. And I think I always felt like, man, I'm the little guy that's just got to figure it all out. And I figured it all out and not very well in a lot of those situations. So I think writing that was something really meaningful and
cathartic
me.
About it.
Yeah, yeah. How does it strike
man,
you as you hear it?
Golly, there's a couple of things that come to mind, and some just knowing you for all these years. Yeah. That was really good.
Thanks, man.
I mean, really good. It's funny you... We have this in common. I think that one of the themes I hear is courage.
Mm. Gosh, what a great word.
You wish you'd had the courage to fail, to try, to make mistakes. That in our Southern church world, that really wasn't allowed.
Wasn't valued.
Wasn't valued at all. And but man, I think of your kids, and they're so courageous.
God.
You know? So there's something, I think mine are. And so there's something about the woundedness that we automatically transfer without even trying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes me think too, and I know this is on a podcast that we scrapped, but tell the story about you and Josh.
The school?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think that speaks to this.
Yeah. Pull it all together after I share the story.
I will.
Yeah, I love this story. You know, Josh was the quintessential prankster.
He's your oldest.
He's our oldest, you know, and firstborn. Laura and I were these darn goody two-shoe kids for the most part growing up. You never got in trouble. Teacher's pets kind of deal, right?
And can I say this to the parents out there? If you've got kids in high school or younger, just set aside some money for their counseling for your firstborn.
Yeah, college
funds,
not nearly
as important. No, you're going to need it, guy. You're going to screw them up so badly. I'm just telling you. It's like my niece said to me, I just don't want to be a bad 16-year-old driver. I said, baby, there's no good 16-year-old driver. So don't worry about it. You're going to be horrible at best.
That's just the way it works.
It's the way it works. So anyway, go ahead.
So Josh was this unbelievable prankster. And in hindsight, he was courageous and smart and creative and bored to death in school. You know, I can remember as early as second grade. Yeah, I can remember as early as second grade getting these calls and they say, hey, can you come in? We need to talk to you about something Josh had done. And there's always these little things. Well, as he got older, they became bigger, you know. So he had this he had a prank one year with a bunch of marbles that, you know, he spread out, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000, or maybe his BBs all over the school cafeteria, you know? And then there was another year we had the little smoke bomb during the pep rally. The seniors were abusing the freshmen, so he went over and threw a bunch under the seniors, you know, area and blew up. But the thing about Josh is Josh always got caught. Like, there's a part of me thinking he wanted to get caught just because it was like, okay, well, I did it. I'll take responsibility.
I want credit for it.
Never lied about it, you know? Well, this particular one that you're referring to was the day that radically changed our relationship, and not all for good. Josh had pulled off, I think it was junior year. He had gotten to school earlier and had created this distraction, that something that would be a distraction during an English class. Long story short, he hid a remote control fart machine in a garbage can during a test. And so you can just imagine, you know, I've told you this story 20 times and it still brings laughter.
Oh God, I laugh every time. It's so brilliant. And part of me is jealous. Like, I didn't think of it.
I know.
You know, God. Shout out Josh again.
Again.
Yeah, you're the best.
But when I got the call from the school, can you come here? We need to talk to you. And I go in the principal's office, and it's Josh and a principal and the teacher and the assistant principal. I don't know, man. What went off in me was, how dare you? There's nothing funny about this. This is disrespectful. And, you know, what was getting activated, and we'll talk about this more one day, but there was probably so much fear going on in me, like, oh my gosh, my boy's not going to be okay. He's going to be a serial killer. I mean, I went disproportionately large.
What are people going to think?
About me, you know, and about him, but really about me.
About you.
You know? So I think that day on the drive home, you know, we walk out of the school, and Josh goes, hey, Dad. And I said, Josh, shut up. Mm. And we walk to the car, get in the car, and start to pull out of the school parking lot. And he goes, Dad. I said, Josh, I said, shut up. I don't want to hear from you. I mean, I was just fuming. And we drove into
rage.
Our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was scared to death, but didn't know it. So it was coming out sideways like rage, exactly. And I'm gonna dominate him. I will control him.
Until he never does that again.
By God, I'll teach him something today.
Yeah.
That was my heartbeat, you know?
Yeah.
We pulled in our neighborhood, parked down by the pool. We walked back. There was a little bit of wooded area. And we get back in there, and Steve, it's like I unleashed verbal hell on my son. I murdered him verbally that day. I didn't touch him physically, but I'm in his face and yelling, you will not disrespect people. If you want to disrespect people, disrespect me. You think you're such a tough kid. I mean, it was like,
oh, wow.
Everything you can say wrong came out of my mouth. It was just like, I will crush your world. And I did it for several minutes until Josh kind of broke and kind of fell in my arms, crying a little bit. And I remember putting my arms around him, and I had these two thoughts simultaneously. Good, he sees the error of his ways. And then, like, immediately after that, I thought, dang, something about this doesn't feel right. Hmm. I went the next day and talked to a couple buddies that I worked with and told them what happened. And, man, they're high-fiving me. That's good. And I remember one of them said, you know, boys need that kind of strength from their father. Sometimes you're putting him in his place. That's what he needs. And even in that moment, I felt two things. I felt really good. I'm getting affirmed from these men that I respect. And the other part of me is going, what did I really do with my son? Was that right? And Steve, it would be, I guess this was his freshman year, because it would be a couple years later. And it was the summer before he entered senior year of high school. And he and I were driving together. Our relationship had been just really, you know, one word responses from him for several years during that time. And that moment was the crescendo moment of, I think, some overbearing, harsh parent for me. But I'd never done something like that with him. I mean, I just lost my ever-loving mind. And I remember he turned to me and said, hey, Dad, why do you think our relationship is so hard?
Wow.
This is this 17-year-old about to go into senior of high school. And I said, but I don't know. There's a lot that's gone into that. I know I don't know. And he said, well, Dad, I'd like to know, can you help me? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm your dad. And he goes, yeah, but you're also a counselor. Kid's brilliant.
He is.
And he said, like, what would you say to me? And I said, well, let's role play it. And we're driving out in the country toward Leaper's Fork. And I said, well, Josh, thanks for coming to the office today. And we both kind of chuckled, you know. I said, tell me about your dad. And as you would expect from Josh, you know, oh, my dad's a good man. A lot of people like him. He helps a lot of people. You know, I mean, he says the right things. And he says, you know, he's a wise man. I mean, just said beautiful, nice things.
All right.
And all I could do is say, well, Josh, that may be true, but, and I don't know why I asked this question. I said, but Josh, that may be true about your dad, but tell me, how has your dad hurt you? And Steve.
Oh, gosh.
Immediately. Well, there was this day, remote control fart machine, Woods by the pool, screaming, yelling. Dude, I had apologized for that day to him because I came to my senses before that moment. I came to my senses within a couple of days of doing that and talked to Laura, and Laura would have helped me get to my senses quickly. I apologized to him for several times, but my boy for 2 years had carried that. And again, there'd been no way for him to process it well, and I guess, and for me, I didn't know it was still there. I thought, well, there's something else going on with him. But it was one of those breakthrough moments when I realized, my gosh, what we do has long-term impact. And I've often thought about that day, and I've thought, you know, if I could get that phone call again, can you come to school? And I get there, and they tell me about the remote control fart machine, all that. I think I would have sat there with a straight face and listened, and then I think I would have ask administration, what do you plan to do about it? And which I did that day, and they gave him 3 days of in-school suspension. And I think I would have gotten up, and I would have walked down the hall. And the minute I walked out that office door and entered the hallway, I would put my arm around Josh, and I would go, dude, what an incredible prank. Good golly. Probably not the best timing, but what a great prank. Man, I hate you got the in-school suspension, but oh well, welcome to consequences.
Burger's on me. Burger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I had it to do over, Steve. But again, even in that moment, I think I'm acting out some of the stuff that this little guy just talked about didn't have. So all he knew to do is be morally right, make a good choice. And that's where he saw some of my self-righteousness come out, even in Josh. Mm. What made you connect that story to
this? Well, because I think what you just said, like you would, that's what you would say to however old you were at that time, yeah, Jeff.
Probably 20, 19.
As a parent. But I mean, when Josh was 17 and you were whatever age, I think now that's what you would say to that parent.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that a lot, and we've talked about it some on this podcast that I don't know that I've met very many parents, if any, that have said, man, I wish I'd have been harder on my kids.
Right. Yeah, that's the truth.
But a lot of stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
And your honesty in that in the day, I think, helped curtail some of my rageful behavior with my kids,
too. I'm so grateful.
And
so grateful.
Some of it still filtered through.
Of course.
No doubt. But, and I think there's probably a generation ahead of us that would say, there's too much freedom, you know, because I don't need to explain things. It's just the way I said. That's what we're going to do it the way I said we're going to do it, just because I am. And you can certainly do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to reap the relationship accordingly.
Yeah.
But I thought, man, that's the first thing that came to mind when you said looking back on younger Jeff.
Yeah.
And courage. I don't think I knew this about you till we started this podcast, but that you were such a rule follower.
Yeah. So fear-based, you know, that foundationally, I think that's what it was. I was just so scared, and primarily of my mother. God love her. I mean, I always say about my mom, you've never been loved until you're loved by my mom. Yeah. You've never been hurt until you're hurt by my mom. You know, mom just was, she had that bipolar-like tendency. In this day and age, she may have very well been diagnosed that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but, you know, gosh, when she loved, it was all in. And I would come in the door after school and, you know, it'd be my favorite dessert made and come to the table, tell me about your day, you know? And man, I'd come in some days and I would be met at the door with her left hand, you know, slap me across the face. Why didn't you, you know, take your laundry to the washing machine? Whatever. Just like a totally too big of a reaction to the moment.
Right.
So, you know, even in this little letter I wrote, when I talk about, you know, the little boy says, you know, I get afraid when mom yells at me. Man, that's my life story. Well, I didn't deal with it for a long time. and so that's what comes out with Josh. You know, I can remember that day literally when I roll the videotape in my mind of being down there by the pool yelling at Josh, I am exactly recreating the drama between me and between my mom. And my mom would yell and get big and threaten like I did that day. And I would just sit there. And then finally I would break because I was terrified. I don't even know what I've done. And I think that's probably where Josh's heart was that day. Well, okay, I pulled a prank. What's the big deal, dude?
Yeah.
But for me, again, that crap gets triggered. But the long tail, I think that's why this exercise can really be valuable for us. It brought me to tears a couple times when I was writing it, Steve, because I realized there's still these parts of me that I feel like I've been responsible with. I've been in tons of counseling myself and tried to understand the impact of the super passive dad in my life who's such a good man but super passive and offered me no guidance. And then this overbearing, demanding mom at times who could be verbally and emotionally abusive at times. You know, I've done tons of work with that, and yet there's still – that little boy still lives in me. You know, there's still that part of me that gets scared. There's still that part of me that wants to hide, that wants to play small, that wants to please people. Gosh, he's grown, and I've grown, and I know how to help him, and I know how to regulate him, and I know how to set him down and say, hey, we don't need to be afraid. I've got this. But I would be a liar if I thought that still didn't percolate its head up. So I think this exercise was – I did it because I thought, well, Sarah did it. I'm going to try it. But, gosh, it became a surprise thing for me of going, I want to pay attention to my own story, even in this season of my life.
When you reread it just now or read it before we got here, mm-hmm. what phrase or section surprised you the most that you said, man, did I write that?
Yeah. I think I know.
You can look through it.
I'm going to just peek for a second.
Yeah.
I don't know if it surprised me the most, but I think the one that screams at me is probably, there's probably three of them. It's the, when I said back to him, even authority figures like parents, bosses, and pastors aren't always right. You know, I was so conditioned that you respect authority. And, you know, there's a space for that, right?
Sure.
But it was so ingrained that if somebody who's an authority said this, then no matter what they said, you do it. Well, that leads to great harm, and that's how I lived. In several work relationships, you know, I found myself just working with people. Man, I did this in Chicago days. I reproduced it where, you know, I'd just be with people who I thought, well, if they say that, that's what I need to do because they're the authority. They must know I'm wrong. That one hits really home. Like that was one of the ones that I think jumps out to me. It's going, I'm grateful for the growth that's happened in that. But man, I carried that one. I carried that one until I was probably 47, 48 years old.
I wonder why.
Great question. I can go lay on the couch and we can get the therapist in here. Yeah. I think the things that come to me is it was so familiar. I think it's what connection felt like for me growing up. And I think there was still this part of me that the little boy was still driving the bus. Mm. You know? People would see this confident man who could communicate and lead and talk and stuff, but the little boy was under there going, hey, keep, that's why the stage is the other one, you know. The stage felt safe to me because up here, I'm the expert because you can't ask me a question.
People don't know you.
Yeah, yeah. Shut up, Steve. You can't ask me a question. You know, I get to perform.
Let's get to talk.
Exactly. But boy, that did more damage to my soul than in real time I had any clue because it reinforced, as long as you look good, you are okay.
Yeah.
I looked really good. But I wasn't okay.
Well, and you're an intuitive guy, mm-hmm. and I have some intuitive abilities. That's been one of the fun part about our conversations is I think I'm a rebel at heart, but also struggled with a lot of fear. And so anytime anybody in authority tells, has a mandate, tells me something to do, my first question is always, well, why would I do that?
Yeah, right. You said it before.
Now, I don't have, the courage always to act on it. Now, there's a place, I think, biblically, there is a place for authority, mm-hmm. and authority is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, mm-hmm. don't hear me saying that it's not.
Yeah.
But I've tried to raise our kids where, and I've struggled with this concept, and man, this would be a Jeff at Gmail for your comments, not to me, but I struggle with authority just based on chronology.
Hmm.
Just because somebody's lived to be 90, okay. God made them. I don't know them. I'm going to be respectful of their story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't automatically mean that they've earned respect.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah.
I want to see how you lived your life.
Yep.
What do your kids say? What do your friends say? Mm-hmm. All the while extending grace. Like, I don't know all their story. And man, they've made it a long time.
Right.
But there's more to it than just God hasn't taken you
God hasn't taken you out yet.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of surviving.
Yep.
I don't know that that automatically commands respect, if I can say it that way.
Right. Or not even by surviving, but I think in my background, it was the label you carried.
Sure.
You know,
this
there were
person.
Certain labels. Right. Sorry, there's my cough. But there are certain labels that if you carry it, then, well, you must be authority, and what you say must be right.
And you know where I was going with the intuitive part of it is, you know, if you've been around, you know, if you believe the story of the Bible, mm-hmm. you know mm-hmm. that person in authority is a sinner just like me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I may not see it, but they are. Yeah. And so positions worthy of some mm-hmm. respect and deference mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they also, there's junk in there.
Yeah. Now, I've worked with a lot of churches in my last 15 years. Really enjoy going and trying to help churches get healthier. But, you know, one of the phrases I've heard in several churches that I've been around is, and often it'll come out of the senior leader's mouth. It'll be something like, well, if you're going to work here, I expect them to respect, what's the line? To honor the man and honor the house. And be like, what does that mean? And what it means is honor the man is the senior pastor, and honor the house is to honor the church. And I remember getting in a pretty significant argument with a guy I was working with one time in a consulting gig, and he was saying, that's just the way it's got to be. I said, no. I said, you're basically just elevated yourself above Scripture, above God, above everything. Dude, let me be really clear with you. I don't think you are ultimate authority. Well, in this house, I am.
Mm.
And needless to say, we didn't work together. But I was like, golly, that's a scary place. And, you know, because all authority is human. And therefore, just like you said, it's got its flaws to it. And but again, in my world, I was groomed to respect them. They say it, listen.
Right. Well, and then I would think too, so Josh does something like he did.
Oh.
Well, that just screams, I don't respect you.
Yeah.
When it doesn't, I don't think it says anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. But that was the interpretive grid for me.
Right.
Literally, that was, you're being so disrespectful. I remember when I was yelling, you want to disrespect somebody, disrespect me. Literally, those are the words that came out of my mouth. I mean, I remember them as if I said them yesterday.
Wow.
Instead of being able to go, dude, you enjoying your burger?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, and the reality is, I think too, looking back, I mean, everything has consequences. And again, there are consequences when you're a parent for your kids not doing what they need to do. And you've got to be hopefully the wise judicial arbitrator of that.
Yeah.
Okay. But a lot of times there are just natural consequences.
Mm-hmm.
The school's going to give him in-school suspension.
Yeah.
What, nothing worse for a kid like Josh than to have to sit in school and sit still and be in a suspension
and
not see anybody for 3 days. Yeah. I mean, that's hell. So
exactly.
A lot of times it just takes its course,
but again, going back to this exercise, my family of origins message was, if you get in trouble at school, you'll get in bigger trouble when you get home.
Right.
So what did I learn? I learned early on that, okay, well, if a kid messes up somewhere out there, it doesn't matter what the consequence is to them. When they get home, I'll give them a bigger one.
Yeah.
So when my kids would get a speeding ticket, you know, early days of driving, my first blush, especially with Josh, the firstborn, again, sorry, son, with Josh would be, all right, then you got, give me your keys. You've lost your car. You got a speeding ticket. Instead of going, wait, he's already got a consequence. You know, this is where I think we parents get it wrong so often. We don't take the opportunity to be compassionate to our kids when they've screwed up and when they already get a consequence. And, you know, speeding tickets are great opportunities. In school suspension is a great opportunity just to say, wow, man, so that prank, was it worth it? Okay, well, gosh, so that's what happened. And just to be there to be compassionate and love them through it.
Man, I think you and I talked about this. That's a great word. Mm-hmm. And again, it doesn't apply to every situation, but I think when your kids get a little older, even when they're younger and they're grounded or in trouble for something, if you can step back, my wife was so good at this, is so good at this, but when our kids were younger, one of the things our friend Susan McKinney said to her one time that stuck with her, sticks with me to this day, she said, try to say yes every time you can. And I thought, man, that is, Bob and Susan were, you know, they're so fun and mm-hmm. great with their kids mm-hmm. and
we tried to do that. And man, we sucked at it sometimes. But
yeah.
Even if your kid's grounded on a Friday night, mm-hmm. I mean, you probably don't want to do this, but I would just say, what a great time to go get a pizza.
Right. Right.
Hey, walk in the room. I know you don't like me and not mad at me, but I don't want to have to eat the whole pizza alone. Would you split it with me? You don't have to say a word. Yeah. Or can we watch a movie? Or just you can be an authoritative figure mm-hmm. and still be mm-hmm. beside them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's all they want.
Yeah.
Is they'll get over the mad of
you know,
having discipline in their lives or encouraging or you know, being a disciplinarian in some way, but just be with them.
Yeah. When you said that, it reminded me of another conversation with Josh and Sarah, but it's piggybacking what you said, I think the best authoritative moments we have as parents, if you please, is when we do it out of a posture of humility.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I remember Josh and Sarah, they were probably 14 and 13, you know, and they wanted to go see some movie. I have no idea. Can't remember. But, you know, back in those days, again, fear-based parenting, I was terrified. So I got on... Do you remember those? I can't remember what they're called. Like, you know, these websites you'd go to that would tell you all about the movies and how many cuss words and was there nudity and was there drinking and you know.
The fact that I don't even know that those websites existed, what does that say?
You were probably not as fear-based as me. So Laura and I, we would always, if there was a new movie, we didn't know something about it. If it was rated PG-13, we'd have to, you know, scroll through and see what it was. So I looked at it, talked to Laura about it, and we both decided, no, they shouldn't go to this movie. And so... they were so excited to go. Their friends were going.
Oh man!
And so you know they came down. I remember sitting right in the front room. I said, "Hey guys, you know, Mom and I've talked. We're not going to let you go to the movie. Sorry, we just don't feel good about it. We've looked at it." And you know, Sarah was probably more demonstrative in those days. You know, her response and just very disappointed, very frustrated, and inappropriate. You know, neither of them were inappropriate at all. Josh probably just sulked and was like, "Fine," you know, like couldn't believe it. And the cold, you know, winter came in the house really quick at that moment. You know. And then I don't know why, but as we were sitting there, I said, "Hey, can I ask you guys two questions?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you think I'm right about everything?" And Josh looked at me like I had, you know, three eyeballs. And Sarah just said, "No." You know, she was pissed, man. "No." I said, "Okay." And Josh just nodded his head. "I agree." You know, and I said, "Okay." Second question: do you think that I think I'm right about everything? And it was really quiet. Because I think their first blush was, uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know? But then after, I don't know, 30 seconds or so, I think it was Josh who said, "Probably not." And I said, "You guys, I don't think I'm right about everything. But I feel like in real time I have to make a decision. And I'm trying my best to make a really good decision. And I think the good decision is for you not to go to the movie. Here's the deal. Fast forward the tape, 10, 15 years from now, we may be sitting around Thanksgiving table and we may talk about this movie and you two may look at me and go, 'Dad, thanks. That was so wise. I'm so glad you didn't let our young brain see it.' Or you may look at me and say, 'Dad, you were wound too tight and we're just going to die laughing.' But today..."
Or we may be watching this movie as a family today.
Yeah, exactly. I said, "But today I'm just going to make the decision that I think is a good decision."
What a great way to phrase it though.
It was. I don't know where that came from, but I liked that because I wanted my kids to know. I don't know, but I'm doing the very best I can do. I've tried to research, and I think this is what I need to do. Well, I didn't know, though, the other thing I said that day was really self-fulfilling prophecy. The number of times we sit around a Thanksgiving or some other table, and we look back, and we laugh, generally, at decisions I made that were so fear-based or where they were wound a little too tight.
Right.
But I'm grateful my kids are at that table, that they've been able to overcome moments when I was too command and control. I was too tight.
Sure.
Again, it's this little boy that I wrote this little blurb to today. You know, he had no guidance, so he did what he thought was right, but sometimes it just flat out wasn't.
What were the other two things that stood out?
I think one of the other ones was about the stage. You know, I can remember Steve being 18 or 19. And this is weird. I don't think this is normal, but it was that hyper-religiosity, rural East Tennessee Pentecostalism that I was raised in. You know, the stage was the money place, man. You know, and I don't mean literally, but it was just like, gosh, if you get up there, you've arrived. And I had a bunch of friends who were, you know, early 20s, and they were already up and doing their things on the stages and preaching and teaching or singing or whatever. And there was like this, man, I will really be a good Christian if I stand up on a stage like that and communicate truth one day. Mm. And yet, you know, I went in the corporate world for a while and did a sales job for a while and loved that, but then felt like I needed to go back to grad school, felt like there was this calling in my life to be a pastor. And that really was the way God led me, you know, and I did that and became a pastor and spoke on some massive events and a church, good-sized churches, and all of my quote-unquote dreams and aspirations to this little 19-year-old boy that I'm writing to came true.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, part of what it took me years to learn was that, I mean, I think I have some gifts in being able to communicate publicly, and I want to steward those well when I have an opportunity. However, they it was like a drug for me, man. It really was my crack, you know, that I feel better about me because I got to say all of that. But the lesson I learned in time was that there's much more meaning and much more purpose for me sitting across the table from you this morning, what happens here, than standing up in front of, you know, 9,000 people and getting to communicate truth about something.
Right.
But that was part of my journey, is going, gosh, can I be at peace with letting people really know me and not just, again, it's that authority thing, standing up on the stage as the authority to let you know what I know.
That's the reason I wanted to do this podcast with you.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because I think, and I told you this before we even started, yep. I think that's the people already know the former Jeff. Person. Yeah. They know Pastor Jeff. Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted them to get to know
Panera Jeff.
Panera Jeff.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
All right. What's the third thing? You said there were three.
Yeah. The third one was, you know, I think the older I get, the more I see this is still in me and I hate it. I think people who know me at a level would say Jeff's a pretty gracious guy and compassionate. And I think that's true. I mean, I think I am. And I've got this self-righteous bent in me that makes me
Amen.
So mad. Yeah. And there's not many people who get to see it, but, you know, it's that judgmental side of me. So that thing where I wrote about, you know, and I can remember looking at my buddies who are making, quote unquote, I think, you know, fair to say at 17, 18, 19, poor choices, you know, messing with drugs, poor choice, you know, binging on alcohol, probably poor choice in those days too. Sleeping around a lot, poor choice. But for me, it wasn't, I didn't have compassion for them. You know, I may have expressed that, but what I really felt was, on the one hand, I was like mad as hell. How dare you do that? I don't do that. I would never do that. I'm smarter than you. I protect myself, you know? I probably was jealous of them.
I don't get to do that.
They were having fun. Yeah, and I was like,
they're doing what 17-year-old kids do?
I was too goody-two-shoes, right? Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But the only way I knew how to frame it was I'm better than them.
Yeah.
And I would never stoop to that. And, you know, I feel like in my late 30s, early 40s, I really started being confronted with the reality of, okay, dude, you got a side in you that's just not pretty, man. My dad, you say, you think your shit doesn't stink, you know? Gosh, it does. It did. It does. But I think that has been one of those lifelong battles with me again. And that's the long tail of legalism. You know, when you're raised in legalism, mm-hmm. it's all about making sure, you know, your holiness is equated to how good you are, which is not holiness at all. Then you become very self-righteous and prideful about it.
I think that my observation over the years, getting to know you, that's funny, and it's something I learned about halfway through our years having coffee. And I agree with this. You've said a lot. Hey, I believe this strongly. A person reaps what they sow.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of that. I think you really do believe that. But there's a part of it that was
feels good
because I haven't sowed anything bad, so I'm going to reap things that are good.
Yeah.
Some of that too, man. I think is. I think if you have a personality type or you are a person that didn't do a lot of overt things wrong,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
it's easy to take that position.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things about the one of the parables that I love is, you may have to help me put it all together, but the two debtors that went to the king that both one owed a great debt that he couldn't repay and one owed a small debt that he couldn't repay.
Yep.
Which was more, you know, who was more grateful, the one that owed more, the one that owed less?
Yeah.
Well, the thing I think that gets lost in that sometimes is neither could repay it.
Yeah. Yeah, gosh, that's good. Yeah.
Neither one had the means to repay it. One just understood that clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm a sinner, and I know it.
Yep.
You know, people around me know it.
Yep.
But you also know, man, I'm, whether you know it or not, the redemption story is for you.
Right. Right.
Because there's a debt that Christ paid for us that we can't pay, whether we're on stage preaching or not.
Right.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And, but if you don't, but if you, for whatever reason, if you didn't make choices along the way, poor choices sometimes, I think it's harder for that person. Mm-hmm. And I was that person growing up to a certain age, just like you.
Yeah.
But I didn't, man. Yep. And I was, and then
straight and narrow, right?
And then I went the complete other way and made every poor choice you can make. Yeah. And then that's not a good road either.
Right. Right.
But you do get some awareness as to.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that old quote. I know we've talked about this a few episodes ago from St. Julian of Norwich, you know, from 13th century, if I remember right. Sin is behoovely. Sin is necessary. There's a purpose to it.
And there's a season that it's appealing.
Of course.
Well, or it wouldn't be.
I think it always is.
Why would it wouldn't be called temptation if it wasn't.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
It's not like it's. Yeah. Not something that you want to do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, it's fun though. I think in this season of life, I feel like this has been true for the last 10, 15 years. As I'm out on my own doing this kind of work, meeting people who I, you know, the privilege of working with people who I just, you know, I really enjoy the people I get to sit in this office with, Steve, and they're really good people. And some of them are battling something really hard. And I think I can say with integrity, I don't feel like my judgmentalism or my self-righteousness comes in this office. You know, I just like.
No, man, I wouldn't think that. I wouldn't say that at all.
You know, I just think there's like, gosh, there's just this nothing but a compassion going, man, I get it. And maybe you haven't done what you've done, but boy, I get it because I know what it means to struggle. And I want to struggle well, as an old friend of mine used to say. But there's this little thing I read a few years ago, and I think of it from time to time. And I would have loved to told this little boy in his self-righteousness. I would have loved to told him these words. Let me see if I can quote it. It says, every person that you meet is fighting a battle that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
Be kind always.
Yeah.
And I think I would have probably said, don't judge always. You know, it's easy to get pissed off at people that are doing something that you just feel like, well, that's just so stupid. Why would they do that?
But you don't know their story.
There's a story, man. There's something's going on.
There's a story there.
And that's the man I desire to grow into and to continue to try to grow into. Is I just want to be so compassionate and gracious to people who see, view, think, believe, value differently than me. They got a story. And when I do an exercise like this and I look back in the rearview mirror in my own life, I realize, gosh, that's what that guy needed. That self-righteous little 19-year-old and that 29-year-old and that 39-year-old, he needed somebody to go, dude, it's going to be okay. And honestly, there's a pastor I worked with in Chicago named Jim, and Jim was the first guy that really held the mirror up to me in that area. Jim said to me one time, he said, Jeff, you need to take a bath in grace. I thought, what the heck does that even mean? And as we would unpack it, he would say, you know, you push so hard, you go so fast that you find yourself really frustrated at people that aren't keeping up with you. He said, but I don't think it's just in performance that you do that. You kind of have this metrics or this measurement that you're looking back and going, well, if they're not meeting my standard, they're not good enough. And I remember thinking, nobody's ever said that to me. That's not true about me. Well, I think Jim just saw me really well.
Yeah.
And it was the first time someone held him and said, you know, there's a self-righteousness in you you need to see. So anyway, those are the three that really jump out to me going, I'm grateful. I think the one of them that was just, it was sweet to write. And it sounds like, because I sound like I'm boasting, and I really don't have any desire to do that with this. But, you know, I really wanted to go to med school. I wanted so badly to be a doctor. And that cardiology world was so fascinating to me. And you know, I thought, man, working on people's hearts and, you know, helping with heart attacks, and it seemed great. But organic chemistry, you know, brought me to reality real quick. But I love that little phrase when I said to him, I told him that's a great dream, and one day you will tend to people's hearts.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Just in a different way than you were thinking.
When you have.
Dude, I love that. I love that I get to just walk with people responsibly, not just vocationally, but I hope I do that with my friends. I hope I do that when me, you, and our wives and other couples are sitting around my table or your table. You know, I just.
Well, I think you have.
I want to do that well. I mean, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I get to be surrounded by people like you who do it back to me, and I think that's what keeps my heart pumping well, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm going to go back to the self-righteous for just a second. I don't see a ton of that anymore.
Mm, that's a gift, man. Thanks. Yeah.
So I think that's it was there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Can I tell you how you've called it out?
Oh, gosh.
You're so good at this. Gosh, this is where you just have a superpower, Steve. at least with me.
Yeah. I'd like to get that on tape and say it again.
It is superpower. Right now.
Yeah. All right. That's right. Oh, yeah. We're on the podcast.
Hey, Jen, listen up. I'm going to tell you about Steve. I can think of mornings at Panera when we're the four of us or three of us are talking about something, and I'm not even aware of it, but I'm getting activated about something I'm hearing that some church did or some person did or somebody, whatever the topic was. And I would say, well, yeah, I really wish what they do is da, 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 da. I would just kind of lay out my, I know better. And you'd say something like, you have so many of these lines, but so why do you think your way would be better? And you have these ways of just taking a simple phrase like that and exposing and me going, oh my gosh, I'm doing that thing again, aren't I? Or I would say something about someone that, I wouldn't even hear it as judgmental. And you'd say something like, well, gosh, he did that. What's the big deal? Have you never done that? And, most of the time I'd be like, oh, yeah. Why is that pissing me off so much about what they're doing? Again, to the little boy, look in the mirror, bud. Slow down. You got your own stuff.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think one of the things I loved about our meetings over the years with you and our other guys is that's a place you could do that.
Yeah.
And you could have that dialogue. And I could ask that question, and maybe I'm wrong.
Yes.
And we could talk about it or hash mm-hmm. it out. You didn't have to be perfect. You didn't have to think perfectly.
Yeah.
We discussed some controversial things. We had some controversial events happen.
We did.
And
we walked through well. Mm-hmm.
And it was just a very... probably overused word, but it was a safe spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think you could feel free to ask questions and get feedback and see how they were.
Yeah. We need that, don't we? That safe spot. Yeah.
I think guys do. I mean, women do too. And, but I think they break down, sometimes they break down barriers differently, but a guy needs a place where he can tell the truth, as much truth as he wants to tell.
I think that's why.
In a moment.
I think it's why I love my little office setup here. I can see like 8 or 9 people in here, and 3 or 4 times a year, I'll do these groups for men. And sometimes they'll be topic driven. Sometimes they're just more like, let's just talk about stuff. And I think what you realize really quickly when we come together as men is that we start slow. It's almost like we're posturing a little bit. 80% of us do, but man, week 2 or week 3 of an 8-week group, what happens in here is, I think it's holy ground. just like guys really desperately desire to be known and to be in relationship with other men. Most of us don't know how to do it. Mm. And I don't know. I think that's some of my favorite work when I get to be a part of that. And not just work. I need that in my own life, but I'm grateful for those moments.
Yeah. God, that was good, man.
Thanks for letting me share it.
Really good.
So there's this part of me I want to go, okay, your turn. Time for you to go right to that little boy because... I'd like to know more about him, man.
Yeah. I might do that. I'm not committing to do that. I'll think about that, though. I've done a few little exercises like that before.
Right.
And I might do it off the cuff a little bit, or I might write something down.
Yeah. But. Yeah. There's something about writing it that
I could see
was
that.
Powerful,
Yeah.
I think it just forced me to go, no, if he just said that, I know it's hypothetical, but if he just said that, which comes from me, what would me, Jeff, sitting at this table, want to say to that young guy? And I found myself, I don't think that's what I want to say. Wow, I just shamed him. Like there was one of them where I thought, oh my gosh. like this is the one, this was my first version, if I remember it right. I said, he told me that his friends are making bad choices and how it bothered him. And what I wrote was, I said, look in the mirror. Oh my gosh. What the heck?
With the right response, it's maybe just a little different tone,
But there it is. Yeah. It's like, slow down. So I love when I go to places. I said, hey, man, be careful. It's easy to feel self-righteous when you're not making their mistakes. Like, that feels so much more compassionate. And again, that's what this exercise is. How can I be compassionate that poor little boy that, again, was swimming upstream, man, swimming upstream.
And I think if you're out there and you know, you're a guy's guy and you're going, why would I want to be compassionate to myself? Okay.
Exactly.
I would say as a past middle age, as an old guy, I would say the reason I think it's important to be compassionate to yourself is because your junk drips out on everybody else around you if you're not.
It does.
And you may not care about that, but if you do at all,
deal with your stuff, man.
Deal with your shit, because it goes all, that's what I wanted to say, and so I'm going to say it because I'm 58.
I'm glad you did.
Your shit gets all over everybody if you don't deal with it.
Yeah. And like my dad says, and it will stink.
And it does. And so I just, again, for the guys,
yeah,
man, just give yourself some grace. Yeah. And use the same, you know, I know so many guys that are creative in business and creative in their, or are creatives in music or art, whatever. And, you know, you can bring that same creativity to your home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you said that, you know, about if you're a man's man, don't want to, why would I do this? I felt like that was an exhortation from you. Your stuff's going to leak all over people. I think my favorite line in what I wrote, and it's funny because I'd sent this line to Jacob a couple weeks ago. You know, he's the one that loves lyrics on songs, catches clever songs. And so we'll swap back lines we hear in a song, or he probably sends them to me more than I'll send them to him because he hears these clever lines. And then sometimes he'll think, hey, I was thinking about this line. What does this sound like? And he has really funny ones too. But I said, okay, I got a lyric for you. I've never heard it in a song, and maybe it's out there and I just don't know, but write me a song around this. And it was this line right here. I'm going to leave the old wounds behind and carry my healed scars into the future. Healthy men don't walk around with gaping wounds. Problem is, a lot of us don't even know we have gaping wounds. But the people who try to get close to us, they feel the mess that comes out of us.
100%.
So I love what you said, man. And just how do I tend responsibly to those areas of my heart? That's so important. That's so important.
Yep. Great.
Thank you for letting me share this day.
That was awesome, man.
It was fun.
Really good.
It was fun to, in light of our podcast, it was fun for me to look in the rearview mirror today and to think about that little boy. So enjoyed the conversation, and I'm going to hope you write. If so, I'll look forward to hearing Steve's version someday.
I'm going to take that under advisement, and we'll see what comes.
Consult your lawyer.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to a few people on my team.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. Tune in next week when Steve may talk about this, and Steve may not talk about this, but we will talk about something.
Yep.
We're out.
See you.
Bye.